5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome back into the Radcast, everybody. I'm Steven.
I'm Matt.
And thank you all for joining us once again. I just want to say at the top here, thank you, everybody who has listened and given us feedback on last week's episode. Mm-hmm. At the time we're recording this on August 6th, the Sunday, August 6th.
Yeah.
The episode's been out for just a couple days, and it had the most single-day downloads of any of our episodes ever. And 5 years of podcast... Oh my God, I just realized. Oh. So, August 4th marked 5 years of us podcasting.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry I didn't make a post
about
it.
No, that's okay. It's not 5 years with the Radcast, but we start if you're just joining us today or if you've been with us for a while, you know that we started podcasting 5 years ago with some friends of ours on what's called the Proper Gentleman Podcast. Mm-hmm. Subject matter is pop culture related, similar to this.
Nostalgia related.
And that branched off into us at the Radcast here. And then we did Sucktastic Cinema for a year. And then we came back to the Radcast.
Oh, yeah. And it's crazy to think about. Now, our first Proper Gents episode didn't drop until September 2018.
Right. Yeah.
We didn't record for it till September 2018. But we did sit down on August 4th. 2018 and recorded kind of a demo episode for Proper Gents to kind of figure out what the setup would be, kind of how we would, you know, approach it, kind of see what the dynamic would be, how we would deal with someone being remote. Because at the time, Zach Matthews, who's been on the show, on this show multiple times, you know, he's still in Florida. So at the time, it was just him who was remote.
Yeah.
So we were just kind of working out to see how podcasting for us would go.
Yeah.
We talked about the 2018 Comic-Con.
Yes. And I can't go back and listen to that because it's purely like trying to put on podcast voice.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, yeah. And so what I'm thinking too is hopefully with Batman, maybe they're going to, you know, like
some of the earliest Proper Gents
before
we really, before maybe, you know, our October episode, some of the early Proper Gents, it's hard for me to go back and listen to. Not all of them. I still love going back and listening to some of our earlier episodes. But all that being said, though, 5 years of podcasting.
Crazy.
Hopefully a few more going strong.
Yeah.
We really, really were happy with the six mix.
Yes.
Kind of what we're going to be doing with Rambles, at least for the time being.
Yes.
If that's going to be very guest centric. If it's Matt and I, and we have to pull out a ramble, we'll think of something, but we'd like to really get a variety of guests. Cause it is right now. I know we kind of cycle through the same guests, which we love.
Sure.
But with something like the six mix, it kind of lends it to, there's prompts where we can have different kinds of people on.
If we don't have, cause sometimes with guests, it's like we come up with an episode and we're like, oh, like what if we had this person, you know, if we want to have someone on the podcast, but we can't think, well, what will we have them on for? The six mix.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of, we were going to do it this episode.
Yeah.
We mentioned last week that we were going to have another one for this week.
Yeah.
Our plans with our guest to record fell through, but we will have another one with him.
Yeah.
I think we're going to record this week, right?
Yeah. I just rescheduled for the next week. So the time you're listening to this, we're recording again. Sunday, August 6th. The episode's been out 2 days, and it's gangbusters. Gangbusters.
Yeah.
But we should be recording the Friday after this one, and we're super excited.
Yeah. So we should have another six mix for the next episode.
Yeah.
While you're listening to this one, next week should be another six mix.
Mm-hmm. All that being said, because we had to reschedule with our guests for this week to have an episode. We kind of pull from an episode we were going to do a few months ago that at that time kind of fell through.
Yeah.
And that is, it may seem random, but I'd say not so much. We're getting the dog days of summer.
Yeah.
We're getting kind of the thick of the, the baseball season.
Yeah.
We did a 90s baseball episode all the way back in 2019.
Yeah, I was going to say that was a while ago.
Yeah, and we decided, you know what else was interesting and really kind of important to us as young baseball fans was the years of 2000 to 2006.
Yeah, there was a big shift in the MLB in that time window. It went from highest of highs to the lowest of lows.
Yeah.
At least for the marquee stars that the MLB was pushing at the time.
Yeah.
Also, you may not pick it may not be the mics may not be picking it up, but we're recording at my house.
Yeah.
And so Steven's doing laundry. So if you hear background noise, it is my washer and dryer.
Yeah.
Yeah, my washer and dryer.
Yeah. So, and with this episode, it came about because we actually found our notes for that episode. Because up until like very, very recently, we were like, what are we going to talk about?
Yeah.
We found our notes here and this is
like,
what
let's
we
just do this.
Yeah. This is what we came up with. So
we do. I know we bring up a lot that we schedule things in advance and have a structure, like a schedule. We do.
Yeah.
But there are some times to where you hit a weird pocket to where it's like, well, our guest just canceled.
Mm-hmm.
This was what we had. We didn't have an alternative.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do this week? We can't swap episodes or whatever.
Yeah. So we called an audible.
Yeah.
And we were like, okay, well, let's just do baseball 2000 through 2006 because it still was relatively a boom period.
Yeah.
But there was a huge fall for baseball, especially with how popular it became in the late 90s.
Yeah.
So with these notes, I wrote a little preamble here. So 2000 to 2006, the decade that started by continuing the renaissance the game of baseball had been experiencing since the mid-90s, so after the strike.
Right.
The decade that preceded it saw not only a dramatic surge of power at the plate, but also on the mound. The years 2000 to 2004 especially showed that baseball would have beefier numbers to go along with its beefier hitters. Hitting and pitching spectacles both put butts in the seats and weren't exclusive to the regular season or to those parking the ball 40, 50, even 60 times a season. The first few years of the decade saw all sorts of triumphs, heartbreaks, and resilience in the sport. However, it wouldn't be long until the new millennium before the rug would be pulled out from under countless all-stars and players who at one time were considered future Hall of Famers.
Mm-hmm.
One tell-all book from a spurned slugger later, and the league faced investigations, trials, and backlash that would affect it for years to come. The first half of the decade built goodwill with the fans in a number of important ways, but the last half saw measures to carry out damage control from a commissioner who wasn't as ignorant to the issues as he claimed to be. With the black eye steroids presence gave the game, that didn't take away from the joy and excitement many felt watching these new titans of baseball. It also didn't take away from the importance of moments that weren't embroiled in the controversy of steroid abuse in the game. The new age baseball had found itself in was brief, and not what those who ran the show wanted the legacy of the game to be. Courses had to be corrected, and although steroids were headline news, that doesn't mean baseball wasn't having new foundations being laid for the future of the MLB.
Very good.
And that's
you should
the
write for the MLB Network, Steven.
I do.
That is the thing, though, that really helped us with this research, too, is there are the MLB Network did would do had like a mini series baseball seasons.
Yeah.
And basically it just, it will take like, oh, baseball seasons, 1970 something.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like a theme to the episode.
Oh, yeah.
And it'd basically just be a 45 minute episode of saying like that every important thing that happened that year.
Yeah.
And so there are channels that re-upload those.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one channel that has like 2000 through 2003 and it's not all 2006.
Yeah,
all that to say, that was a very invaluable resource.
Oh yeah. And 2006, I know it may seem weird, you know, why not 2000 to 2005?
Yeah.
2006 was a year that was, it was really the first year that they started these kind of universal crackdowns.
Yeah.
And we saw some of the harsher penalties
of
PED use and steroid use and all these things. And 2006 was really the time where players were becoming more clean.
Yeah.
So the more clean players were starting to get more of the spotlight.
Yeah.
You know, although you weren't hitting 60 home runs, you know, there still was one, you know, Brian Howard, but there's, you know, the people who were seen as cleaner players were seen as the more kind of prestigious, the ones to be held up to a higher standard. More specifically, that I'm thinking of Albert Pujols, just as St. Louis baseball fans. He was a hero. But also 2006 was the first time the Cardinals won the World Series in 24 years.
Since 82. Mm-hmm. And it's not really hard to imagine because I remember this vividly, but like it's kind of like nowadays it's so funny that now we're propping up those steroid users again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because enough time has passed. We're like, wait a second. There's still really good baseball players. Mm-hmm. Like now that we understand more about steroids and stuff like that. But back then it was like just this heartbreaking disappointment that your heroes.
Yeah.
Mark McGwire was a hero to so many people. Sammy Sosa, Barry Bonds, you know, like these guys were heroes to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And now like these heroes weren't clean. And it's not like, like Jose Canseco had been getting criticized for steroids since the early 90s, since the late 80s. It's not like steroids was brand new.
Yeah.
But like now we're all starting to be like, oh man, like these players that were flag bearers for the game were cheaters. You know, just that universal disappointment.
I just think it really was kind of the catalyst for the harsher crackdowns because they tried with like enforcing, you know, drug abuse rules like with steroids, but it just was so flimsy.
Yeah.
And they got criticized for just how laughable their protocols were with punishing steroid users and overlooking certain people
because
they made money.
Yeah.
After the strike, people lost faith in baseball and the owners and the players.
Oh, yeah.
That the home runs saved the game. And it's these influx of home runs from these steroid users, minus Ken Griffey Jr., that really saved the game.
Oh, yeah. And you brought up in there that Bud Selig tried to play ignorant. Yeah. But it's like now we know, there's no way he was with all the money it was bringing in.
When Juice came out, that's when someone really publicly put them on blast.
Yeah.
And like,
it was reactive. It wasn't proactive.
No, exactly. And it was like, hey, here are all these people. So it was all, it was reactive. Like we have to do damage control on the things this book is accusing us of.
You're only sorry because you got caught kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So now the damage, they went in full force with, like I said, damage control. And a lot of people had their, some would say as soon as they stuck that needle in their ass or their arm, you know, they tarnished their career.
Yeah.
But, you know, the MLB helped in kind of expediting the tarnishing of so many potential Hall of Fame careers. Yeah. That's what's weird about watching, like, old All-Star games or home run derbies.
Yeah.
Because and leading up to when we were originally going to do this, I watched a bunch of old All-Star games you can find on YouTube, like, from the early 2000s. And, like, someone like Joe Buck is saying, you know, future Hall of Famer Barry Bonds and like Joe Morgan in the home run derby with Chris Berman is like, and Mark McGwire, he's a bona fide Hall of Famer, like stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, same thing like Roger Clemens.
Yeah. And it's brought more people kind of rallying. Like I said, like they're like, wait, they were still great, transcendent baseball players. Mm-hmm. They still went out and did the thing.
Yeah.
You know, so let's have some sort of distinction, like, because just keeping them out of the Hall of Fame just seems like an injustice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's have some sort of, I don't know, a steroid wing or something like that. But people are trying to find every way possible to get these players in the Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
Like, the fact you look at Barry Bonds' numbers, regardless, those are inhuman.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you look at that and say, we're going to keep that guy out of the Hall of Fame.
Plus, Roger Clemens, he played for the Red Sox for 13 years. And like someone like Jose Canseco is saying he introduced Roger Clemens to steroids when they both played for the Blue Jays. But that was in the late 90s. Roger Clemens had played 12, 13 seasons with the Red Sox to where still won a bunch of Cy Youngs, still was a highly acclaimed pitcher. Saint Barry Bonds, before he really, they could probably establish when he started steroids, he still was on course to hit at least 400 home runs.
I think he still would have hit 500 home runs had he not taken steroids.
That's the thing. Some people, like, you could argue maybe a Mark McGwire, you know, without steroids is still a Hall of Famer. He still thinks he could have hit 500 plus home runs without maybe, steroids, you know, cause still could have hit the 70 home runs without steroids.
And, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. But
I think the real tragedy was when he cut his curly mullet.
Yep. That really was. That really was a tragedy. So part of the notes I kind of went through. I don't know how you formatted yours. I just went through. Yeah. Great. You just quickly flashed your phone. I didn't really see what it was. Yep. There it is.
Damn it.
But I went through and kind of took some of the notable things of each year, like new stadiums, because there's an influx of new stadiums, some of the milestones, the moments.
I have some bullet points of some important things, and then postseason results, and I've got the All-Star Game rosters and Home Run Derby rosters and stuff, and whatever games were released that year too, baseball games.
Yeah.
So just whatever I could put together to help.
The thing is, this would be a fun series to do, kind of like how we do, you know, the 90s retrospectives, the 80s retrospectives. I would love to do like a sports-centric one towards like the year 2000 in baseball, because there's so much meat on the bone.
Yeah.
And even as I look at these notes, I'm like, Jesus, this is like...
You do a whole episode on the year 2000.
Yeah. So I'm going to be skipping around with some things and stuff you have covered there. But first, the year 2000, some new stadiums, Pac Bell, which is now Oracle Park in San Francisco, which is famous for McCovey Cove. Comerica Park in Detroit, Enron Field in Houston,
became Minute Maid Park.
Renamed Minute Maid Park and housed the notorious Tal Hill in center field. Yep. And one of the cooler features, the homage to the former Houston Union Station with a train on top of one of the entrances in left field.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. Whenever you hit a home run, the train would run on the tracks.
Oh, yeah. Some moments and milestones. Early in the year, both the Writers Committees and Veterans Committees select Carlton Fisk, Tony Perez, and Sparky Anderson. And the Negro League players, Norman Turkey Stearns, to the Baseball Hall of Fame. Another huge headline news story early on, also King Griffey Jr. requested a trade, which the Mariners obliged to doing. The player of the 90s was sent to his hometown Cincinnati Reds in exchange for pitcher Brett Tomko and outfielder Mike Cameron, which for a few years that panned out for the Mariners.
Oh, yeah. Mike Cameron was very suitable in center field. I mean, he didn't have Griffey's bat, but... Yeah, that was a huge deal because Griffey was a lifetime Mariner.
He was the face of the franchise. And two minor leaguers, Griffey's desire to live closer to family and to be present for his kids came after the death of neighbor and pro golfer Payne Stewart in 1999. March 29th, the Cubs opened the season with a game in the Tokyo Dome against the eventual National League champion New York Mets. The event would be the first Major League Baseball game played outside of North America, with Chicago defeating New York 5-3. The beginning of the season also saw the return of slugger Andres Scalarraga, who just the year before battled non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
The big cat.
With the cancer in remission, the Braves' first baseman returned and was selected to the National League All-Star team later that season, which was held in Turner Field, home of the Braves, that July. He got a huge standing ovation. June 16th, Yankee second baseman Chuck Knobloch voluntarily takes himself out of the game after making three throwing errors by the sixth inning. He was seen leaving Yankee Stadium in civvies while the game was still in progress.
His PJs.
July 8th, during the unique doubleheader between the New York Yankees and Mets, where the afternoon game was played at Shea and the evening game at Yankee Stadium, seeds of an infamous encounter in that year's World Series were planted. Roger Clemens squared off with Mike Piazza, who had a history of owning Clemens at the plate in their matchups. The Rocket threw a pitch at the Mets catcher that beans him in the head and sends him to the dirt. Piazza left the game after having a slow time getting up and later would miss time with a concussion. Clemens claimed it was an accident, but was rumored to have been telling teammates he was going to send Piazza a message that night.
Not the same message he would send to all the magazines of the world at a press conference that I am indeed not gay.
Oh, Mike Piazza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have we ever told that on here before?
I think like I have a feeling in 133 episodes, I'm sure it came up
the whole once. There were rumors that Mike Piazza was a homosexual and he held an entire press conference just to clear his name on that. Sit insecure.
The insecurity of that. I don't want to make fun of anybody's insecurities.
Of course
but
not.
Something like that. I'm just like, you're just open to be comedy fodder.
Yeah. I don't care. You're a Hall of Famer. I don't care how good you are. you hold an entire press conference just to say, I'm not gay.
July 11th, the AL wins the All-Star game by beating the NL 6-3. Derek Jeter taking home All-Star MVP honors after going 3-for-3. That All-Star weekend, what did that look like as far as some of the starters go?
Yeah,
home run derby.
So, yes, the All-Star game rosters, and there's going to be a treasure trove of future Hall of Famers and what I call time capsule players.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just very familiar names.
Yeah.
So for the American League, the elected starters, catcher Ivan Rodriguez for the Rangers, mm-hmm. his 9th All-Star game appearance.
Yeah.
First base, Jason Giambi for the Athletics.
Giambino.
He's a time capsule player. At one point, I think people will believe he's a Hall of Famer, but he also took steroids. And what I mean by time capsule player is when you think of like a specific window of time,
mm-hmm.
usually like a small one.
Yeah.
These are the players you think of who in that small window of time in that particular decade had like the potential to be superstars.
Yeah.
And they fell off somehow.
He's a tough call. Because I'd say
he had a bigger stretch than what I think
seasons,
of.
Seasons. Yeah. I feel like he was consistently an all-star.
Okay.
And he's really the only one who got popped for steroids that was like, yes, I did it.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Yeah. So not time capsule. Because when I say time capsule, I mean like 4 years
his
at the
run
most.
Of dominance
yeah.
was definitely
yeah.
just in that late 90s, early 2000s.
Right. Second base, Roberto Alomar for the Indians, his 11th All-Star game appearance. Third base, Cal Ripken Jr. for the Orioles,
yep.
his 18th. Shortstop, Alex Rodriguez for the Mariners before he took steroids,
mm-hmm.
his 3rd. And in the outfield, Jermaine Dye of the Royals, Manny Ramirez from the Indians, and Bernie Williams for the Yankees.
Mm.
And so that was the elected starters for the American League. The elected starters for the National Leagues, Mike Piazza,
mm.
the Mets, Mark McGwire for the Cardinals, Jeff Kent for the Giants, Chipper Jones for the Braves, Barry Larkin for the Reds, Barry Bonds for the Giants, Ken Griffey Jr. for the Reds, and Sammy Sosa for the Cubs. So far more stacked in terms of power.
And Mark McGwire was hurt, so that's when Andres Galarraga was elected.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And so in the home run derby, Sammy Sosa won. But it's Sammy Sosa, Ken Griffey Jr., Carl Everett.
Carl, dinosaurs aren't real Everett.
Yeah, exactly. Carlos Delgado, Edgar Martinez, Chipper Jones, Vladimir Guerrero, and Ivan Rodriguez, Pudge Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm. Which Pudge, I think, you know, was found to have used steroids,
yeah.
but he's in the Hall
he's
of Fame.
He's in the Hall of Fame.
It's,
David Ortiz used PEDs, but
yeah.
he's in the Hall of Fame. You know, there's a line.
It's weird.
Somewhere.
It seems like they moved the goalposts for some people. If
yeah.
if you were the ones who were in front of the Supreme Court,
yeah.
Yeah. If you were some of the people at the seat in front of the Supreme Court and you had to stand trial, you probably aren't making it into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Yeah. But that man, the home run derby in the 2000s, like home run derby in the All-Star game when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, we marked the calendar.
Oh,
they
yeah.
were events like the home run derby. We sat and watched the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. The format is different now, and it's designed to kind of speed up that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's as fun, honestly.
Yeah, if it's timed, like I watched it once during the time, like it's on a timer. I'm like,
yeah.
this is all right.
Yeah, it's
but
fun.
Yeah, it's it. I don't know.
The fun was letting the home runs breathe. The
mm-hmm.
camera would track them
oh,
as
yeah.
Chris Berman, back.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
oh yeah.
And it's the announcers marveling at it. And you get shots of like the All-Star Game teammates like with their cameras
uh-huh.
and like different crowd shots. You don't get that now.
No. You got to just keep going.
Yeah.
Just like us keeping going
yeah.
here. So after the All-Star break, Major League Baseball can now use the URL www.mlb.com. Since 1994, the league had been www.majorleaguebaseball.com because law firm Morgan Lewis and Bacchus LLP refused to release the rights to it.
R.I.P.
Yes. And finally, big news at the end of the regular season, NBC decides to not renew their MLB broadcasting rights. NBC had been broadcasting baseball since 1947. and outside of 1990 to 93 was the home of the World Series for 26 years. In the postseason, the 91 and 71 wild card Mariners defeat the Central Division champion 95 and 67 White Sox in the ALDS. On the other ALDS matchup, the 87 and 74 Yankees, who limped into the playoffs off of the luck of a terrible AL East division, beat the AL West champion 91 and 70 Oakland A's in 5 games. In the National League, the 95 and 67 Cardinals also is important because 2000 was really when the Cardinals were bouncing back to become playoff contenders.
Yeah. Perennial ones.
Oh, yeah. 95 and 67 Cardinals made their first playoff appearance since 1996, which would start a run of success the team hadn't seen since the Whitey Ball era of the 1980s. They would sweep the defending NL champion Atlanta Brave juggernaut, who once again topped the NL East with a 95 and 67 record. In the other NLDS matchup, the wildcard Mets, with their 94 and 68 record, bested the 97 and 65 San Francisco Giants in 4 games. The Mets carried this momentum into the NLCS, breaking the hearts of Cardinal fans and beating the Cardinals handedly in 5 games. I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember Benny Agbayani's late inning hit that really was kind of a nail in the coffin. In the ALCS, the Yankees found their own footing and beat out the Mariners in 6 games to make their third straight World Series appearance. The stage was set for an event that hadn't happened in 44 years at that point. All across the city of New York, the talk of the town was the Subway Series between the defending champion, the Yankees, and the underdog Mets. One of the more infamous moments in postseason history, with the animosity from the Clemens Piazza headshot incident from earlier the season, reared its ugly head. In Piazza's first time at the plate early in Game 2, Piazza swung at a pitch that shattered his bat, and although the bat ended up going foul, Piazza started towards first base as... Oh, ball, sorry. Piazza swung at the pitch that shattered his bat, and although the ball ended up going foul, Piazza started towards first base after he hit it. As innocent as Piazza was treating the situation, Clemens didn't see it the same way.
No way, Jose.
You see, when the Mets catcher's bat split, it sent the broken-off barrel towards Roger Clemens. Clemens picked up the shard that came towards him and threw it at the baseline in front of Mike Piazza. Piazza was confused by a situation that was obviously an accident, but as Piazza started slowly walking towards Clemens, both benches cleared at the potential altercation. After the game, Clemens claimed he didn't see Piazza running towards first, and he had so much nervous energy in the situation, he was pumped up and charged the bat shard, thinking it was the ball. Outside of this incident, the Mets couldn't get any momentum in their favor, and the Yankees three-peated by winning another World Series, this time in 5 games. Derek Jeter was named the series MVP.
I have some thank you for that.
Yeah, yes,
Subway
of course.
Series 2000, that is one of the most infamous moments in baseball. Mm-hmm. How do you get the ball? How do you mistake the ball for a bat head that's coming at you? Doesn't even look the same.
Nope.
I do have some awards and honors for 2000.
Ah, yes, I do too. So yes. Go ahead.
The National League MVP was Jeff Kent of the Giants. American League MVP is Jason Giambi from the Athletics. National League Cy Young is Randy Johnson for the Diamondbacks. American League Cy Young is Pedro Martinez for Boston, who had a dominant season in the wake of, like, this was the apex of offense in 2000, the most runs scored since like 1930 or something. Yeah. Rookie of the Year in the National League was Rafael Furcal for the Braves. The Rookie of the Year in the American League was Kazuhiro Sasaki for the Mariners. Manager of the Year in the National League is Dusty Baker for the Giants. The American League Manager of the Year was Jerry Manuel for the White Sox.
Mm-hmm. In a couple odd seasons, Richard Hidalgo of the Astros hit 44 home runs.
Yes.
And Darren Erstad of the Angels had 240 hits and a 355 average. And Scott Ellerton of the Astros had 17 wins. And Cardinal rookie Rick Ankiel had 194 strikeouts.
Man, you went to, that guys, was he was they were talking about him being the next Sandy Koufax.
Oh,
he had a dominant season that year, and then he just got a case of the yips,
and
he just almost, he did have a renaissance though when he came back and played outfield.
Yep. And so more power to him. He had few just very solid seasons as a hitter. Some 2000
Rick Ankiel a lot.
Yeah. Some 2000 milestones. Or milestones from the year 2000. King Griffey Jr. and Fred McGriff hit their 400th home run, not collectively. Cal Ripken Jr.'s 3,000th hit. Ricky Henderson, his 10,000th career at bat and 2,000th walk. Big Mac moves past Mickey Mantle. Mark McGwire moves past Mickey Mantle for eighth all-time on the career home runs list with his 539th. Oral Hershiser announces his retirement. Vin Scully named number one sportscaster of the 20th century. Jeff Bagwell becomes first Astro to hit 300 career home runs. Angels become first team in AL history to have four players reach the 30 home run mark in the single season. Tim Salmon, Mo Vaughn, Troy Glaubson, Garrett Anderson. Randy Johnson nets his 3,000th strikeout and third consecutive 300K season with 347. Spoiler alert, for 2001, he'd record a record high 372 and another 300 plus for 2002. Some deaths, 16 former big leaguers died in 2000. The most notable was Hall of Fame pitcher Bob Lemon, who retired with 207 career wins but posted 720 win seasons in a row. So the year 2001. Year 2001, new ballparks, PNC Park in Pittsburgh and Miller Park in Milwaukee. Dave Winfield and Kirby Puckett are selected to Cooperstown by the Riders. Bill Mazeroski and Negro League pitcher Hilton Smith are elected by the Vets Committee. One of the bigger news stories was when Alex Rodriguez signs a then record 10-year, $250 million contract with the Texas Rangers.
That was monstrous.
Oh, yeah. He stated intent was to sign with a winner, but it's been stated that his contract tied the hands of the Rangers in their cap space, and it kept them from signing anybody that could help them make a playoff push. Also, he just came from a team that won 90-plus games and appeared in the ALCS the year before. Not to mention, it's the same team that would post 116 wins in 2001.
Yeah.
Oops, egg on your face, A-hole.
A-Rod's just a douchebag anyway.
Yep. Oh, yeah. March 24th in the spring training game between the Giants and the D-backs, a pitch from Randy Johnson strikes a bird and causes it to explode.
Yep.
A very famous moment. 2001 saw the debut of two players who would go on to light up the league year after year and would use the decade to cement themselves as bona fide first ballot Hall of Famers with Ichiro Suzuki and Albert Pujols.
Albert Pujols.
Yes, Albert Pujols. July 10th, the AL defeats the NL once again in the All-Star Game, this time 4-1. This game was held at Safeco Field in Seattle and saw Cal Ripken Jr. and Tony Gwynn make their final All-Star appearances of their Hall of Fame careers. Gwynn was selected but didn't play. However, Ripken was selected to start and in his first at-bat hit a home run and was named the game's MVP. Another moment from the game was when A-Rod insisted Cal Ripken play shortstop for the inning, which he clearly didn't want to do. Ripken says he wanted to tell A-Rod off, but he was mic'd up.
Yep, and so in that All-Star game, here were the starters.
Yes.
Roger Clemens, Ivan Rodriguez for the Rangers, Roger Clemens for the Yankees, Ivan Rodriguez for the Rangers, John Olerud started first base for the Mariners, Brett Boone started second base, also played for the Mariners. The Mariners had four starters in this lineup. They had a monster year that year. Alex Rodriguez for the Rangers started third base, Cal Ripken Jr. for the Orioles started shortstop. Manny Ramirez for the Red Sox in the outfield. Ichiro Suzuki for the Mariners in the outfield. Juan Gonzalez for the Indians.
Yeah, that
in the
was
outfield, which is weird because his huge production years were in the 90s. Designated hitters, Edgar Martinez from the Mariners. The National League starters were Randy Johnson for the Diamondbacks, Mike Piazza at catcher for the Mets. First base, Todd Helton for the Rockies, Jeff Kent from the Giants, Chipper Jones from the Braves, Rich Aurelia from the Giants at shortstop, Barry Bonds.
We always get Aubrey Huff mixed up with Rich Aurelia. Aubrey Huff is an asshole. Rich Aurelia seems cool.
Yeah. Barry Bonds in the outfield, Luis Gonzalez, Sammy Sosa, DH's Larry Walker. And the home run derby that year was won by Luis Gonzalez, who ended up hitting 57 home runs that year. So Luis Gonzalez, Sammy Sosa, Jason Giambi, Barry Bonds, Brett Boone, Todd Helton, Alex Rodriguez, and Troy Glaus.
Not to mention all those starters for the Mariners. I think they had 8 all-star selections.
Yeah.
So it took place in Safeco Field.
Yeah.
They're having the most historic season any team could have wins-wise.
Yep.
So it all was lining up.
Yeah. It was the 2001. If they had won the World Series, it probably could have been seen as like the most perfect season in history for a team.
Yeah. However, a storybook ending was not really what people wanted for the Mariners, because after the All-Star break, if you listen to our 2001 episode, we spent a significant amount of time with our friend Matt Swaffer talking about this event. September 11th, terrorist attacks put the season on hold. At the time, indefinitely. September 13th, Bud Selig states that the season will resume on September 17th. September 21st marked the first sporting event to occur in New York since 9/11. The matchup saw the Mets take on the Braves at Shea. Down 2-1 in the eighth inning, Mike Piazza steps up to the plate for the Mets. In one of the most emotional moments in baseball, Piazza hits a dramatic two-run homer to give New York the lead and propels the team and propels them to victory over Atlanta. Now, I do have an instance to where I believe the Cardinals played before that.
Yeah, that's when Jack Buck did like he did like a famous speech, and actually Samantha, our sister, who was on last week, was with the choir that was singing the national anthem that day.
Yeah,
the first Cardinals game after September 11th.
It was one of Jack Buck's last public appearances, and it's one of the most emotional moments in Cardinals history. Yeah. He read a poem about the endurance of the American spirit, and especially everybody gathering to celebrate the game of baseball.
Yeah,
and it really was an emotional moment. So from then on, people wanted a New York team to possibly go on and win it all. So the postseason saw the 116-win Seattle Mariners face the 91-71 Indians in the ALDS, beating them in five games. In the other ALDS matchup, the Yankees carried the city of New York on their backs, and some would say America's favorite, to make it all the way to what would be their fourth straight World Series victory. They would face the wild card 102-win Oakland Athletics.
Insane.
Yeah. Who, of course, would have been locks at clinching the AL West if they hadn't shared the division with the 2001 Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, who won 116 games.
Just a side note, the team behind the Athletics would be the 75-87 Anaheim Angels, who were 41 games behind the first place M's.
Jeez.
So, needless to say, that two of the best teams in the AL in that division, and also one of the worst. So the disparity was big.
It's always next year, Anaheim.
Ah, yes.
Literally.
Yeah. Hold tight, Anaheim. Anywho, the Yankees beat the A's in five games. On the NL side, Cardinals came into the NLDS as the wild card team, despite being tied for first with the Astros for the NL Central Division lead. They took on the 92-70 Diamondbacks and fell to Arizona in five games. I remember that.
Yep.
The NL Central champion Astros got swept by the Braves in the NLDS matchup. In the championship series, the Yankees were the team to finally stop the storybook season for the M's and knock them out in, who you guessed it, five games. I noticed in doing research for this, there are a lot of five-game
series.
Yeah, a lot of the Yankees winning in five games. In the NLCS, the Diamondbacks beat the Braves in five to make their first World Series. Although five games seemed to be the standard for disposing of opposing teams, that wouldn't be the same for the 2001 World Series. The series wasn't short on dramatics in the slightest.
I remember that series.
Oh, yeah. The series was back and forth with dominant pitching performances by D-backs club aces Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling, who the team picked up in the offseason. However, clutch offensive moments, especially Derek Jeter, who walked off game four in Yankee Stadium, where the clock struck 12 on a game that marked the first World Series game ever played in the month of November. The back and forth saw every manner of game played, including a game seven that provided a situation that fulfilled the dream of every child who ever picked up a bat and ball. In the bottom of the ninth, after the D-backs rallied to tie the Yankees 2-2, the aforementioned Luis Gonzalez from earlier, who already had a banner year, capped it off by walking it off with a bloop single and a World Series victory for the young Diamondbacks team. Mm-hmm. Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson were named co-World Series MVPs. Who are some of the award winners?
Awards and honors. The National League MVP was Barry Bonds for the Giants. The American League MVP was Ichiro Suzuki for the Mariners, which is huge because he also won the Rookie of the Year that year. Cy Young's Randy Johnson. The American League Cy Young is Roger Clemens. National League Rookie of the Year is Albert Pujols. American League Rookie of the Year is Ichiro. National League Manager of the Year is Larry Boa for the Phillies.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. American League Manager of the Year is Lou Piniella for the Mariners.
So some odd seasons. Brett Boone for the Mariners had a weird 37 home run, 141 RBI, 206 hit season.
Yeah.
He'd have another all-star worthy season in 2003 with similar numbers, but what makes the season odd is just how out of nowhere it was for Boone. Some milestones: Albert Bell is forced to retire due to degenerative arthritis in his hip. Barry Bonds hits 500th home run en route to also breaking the single season home run record, which he ended the season with 73.
Yep.
He had 39 by the All-Star break, which is the most ever before the All-Star break. Carlos Delgado hits 200th career home run. Randy Johnson becomes the first left-hander to throw 20 Ks in a game and the first to do it in a losing effort. Sammy Sosa hits 400th home run, also becomes the first player to have 360 home run seasons. Mike Piazza hits 300th career home run. Like spoiled in 2000 section, the big unit strikes out his 300th batter for the season, becoming the only pitcher to have accomplished that feat four consecutive seasons. Bernie Williams hits 200th career home run. Ricky Henderson, 3000th hit, becomes the all-time leader in runs scored with 2,246. Tony Gwynn and Cal Ripken Jr. retire, and Mark McGwire retires after the 2001 season as well. So, 2002.
Yes.
January 8th, Ozzie Smith elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. May 2nd, Mike Cameron hits four homers in a game. May 23rd, Sean Green hits four homers in a game. May 29th, in an article in Sports Illustrated, Ken Caminiti admits to using steroids.
I remember that article.
Mm-hmm. Oh, me too. But also says half of the players in the league use some form of steroid. Mm-hmm. Around the time after recently retiring, Jose Canseco starts flapping his gums about steroid use as well. June 18th, Cardinals broadcast legend Jack Buck, just broadcasting legend, yeah. Jack Buck passes away. 4 days later, all-star Cardinal pitcher Daryl Kyle passes.
That
suddenly,
was a shock.
Oh, yeah. In his hotel room during a road trip in Chicago. First season for MLB TV as well.
Oh, yeah.
So July 9th, 2002, one of the most infamous all-star games in history. The All-Star Game at Miller Park ends in a controversial fashion as the game was called by Bud Selig after 11 innings, a 7-7 tie, and both teams run out of pitchers.
It's just the worst.
Mm-hmm.
But Torrey Hunter did rob Barry Bonds.
That's a fun moment. Yep.
Yeah. So the starters, Derek Lowe from the Red Sox, Jorge Posada from the Yankees, Jason Giambi from the Yankees, Alfonso Soriano from the Yankees, Shea Hillenbrand from the Red Sox, Alex Rodriguez from the Rangers, Manny Ramirez from the Red Sox, Torrey Hunter from the Twins, Ichiro Suzuki from the Mariners, and then on the National League side, Curt Schilling, starting pitcher. He had Mike Piazza from the Mets, Todd Helton from the Rockies, Jose Vidro from the Expos, Scott Rolen from the Phillies, Jimmy Rollins from the Phillies, Barry Bonds from the Giants, Vladimir Guerrero from the Expos, Sammy Sosa from the Cubs. And then in the home run derby at Miller Park, as Jason Giambi won the whole thing. It's Jason Giambi, Sammy Sosa, Paul Konerko, Richie Sexson, Torrey Hunter, Barry Bonds, Alex Rodriguez, and Lance Berkman.
Nice. So after the All-Star break, September 4th, the Moneyball Athletics won their 20th game in a row after coming from behind, after being down 11-0 against the Royals, 11-0 against the Royals. Yeah. The postseason in the 2002 ALDS, the Angels capped off a massive comeback season by going 99-63 and going into the series against the 103-win Yankees as the wild card team. They could have been first in the AL West if it wasn't for the unbelievable push of the Oakland Athletics and their 103-win campaign. The unassuming Angels overcome the powerhouse Yanks by winning the series in four games. Speaking of the storybook A's, they got eliminated in five games by another team on the comeback trail, the 94-67 Twins, who took the AL Central. In the National League, the 97-65 Cardinals took the Central Division without much competition this season, and they continued their head of steam by sweeping the defending World Series champs, the 98-win Arizona Diamondbacks, which, I remember that.
Yep.
In the other NLDS series, which, much like their wildcard counterparts, the 95-win Giants pushed past another historically dominant team, the 101-win Braves. In the ALCS, the Angels made quick work of the Twins in the team's first World Series appearance in franchise on the way to the team's first World Series appearance in the franchise history, thanks to some hot bats, some thundersticks, and a rally monkey.
Rally monkey.
Again, like the AL wildcard team's run, the Giants were seeing a storied run themselves as they knocked off the Cardinals in five games. After a back-and-forth series of notable highlights, some lopsided games, and some equally high-scoring affairs, the Angels dashed the hope for the Giants and captured their first World Series in franchise history. Team slugger Troy Glaus took home series MVP.
Yep. Speaking of MVPs, the 2002 awards and honors. The National League MVP was Barry Bonds, the Giants. The American League MVP was Miguel Tejada from the Athletics. National League Cy Young Award, another Randy Johnson. The American League Cy Young Award, Barry Zito from the Athletics. The Rookie of the Year for the National League was Jason Jennings from the Rockies. The American League Rookie of the Year is Eric Hensky from the Blue Jays. National League Manager of the Year is Tony La Russa from the Cardinals. The American League Manager of the Year is Mike Socha from the Angels.
Nice. Mike Socha was also on Homer's softball team.
Yes.
And Homer at the bat. Some 2002 milestones. Barry Bonds hit 600th home run. He also ties Hank Aaron for most 100 RBI seasons with 11. Vladimir Guerrero hits his 200th career home run. Jeff Kent becomes first second baseman in history to record six consecutive 100 RBI seasons. Greg Maddux joins Cy Young as the only pitcher to win 15 or more games in 15 consecutive seasons. Fred McGriff becomes first major leaguer in history to hit 30 home runs for five different teams. And Jose Canseco retires from the MLB.
Bye, Jose. Yeah. We did a whole episode about Jose Canseco and his Twitter.
Yes, exactly. And I am so looking forward to talking more about Jose Canseco at a later date.
Yep.
So we're going to cap off this 2000s baseball retrospective with 2003 here, and then in a couple weeks we'll do 2004 through 2006.
Yeah. Yep.
So 2003, new ballparks, Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati. January 7th, Gary Carter and Eddie Murray are elected into the Hall of Fame. January 22nd, some scrub from the Twins named David Ortiz signs with the Boston Red Sox.
What's he going
to
do?
Yeah, who'd he ever beat? Before their move to Washington, the Expos play 22 quote-unquote home games in Puerto Rico. June 3rd, Sammy Sosa is ejected from a game for using a corked bat, which when we started, 2003 was when we really started playing organized baseball.
Yeah.
And somebody had a Sammy Sosa branded aluminum bat.
Yeah.
And the joke was always, check the bat for cork.
Yep.
It's like, it's aluminum.
Yeah.
July 15th, you dummies. July 15th, for the first time in the game's history of the Midsummer Classic, the game is played for home field advantage in the World Series. This being a result of the tie game from the year prior, the American
Give
League...
Give it some stakes.
Oh, yeah. The American League once again bested the National League, this time 7-6 in U.S. Cellular Field, home of the White Sox.
All right, so in the All-Star Game, the National League starters, Jason Schmidt for the Giants, Javi Lopez at catcher for the Braves, Todd Helton again, first base for the Rockies, Jose Vidro again, second base for the Expos, Scott Rowland, who's now a Cardinal, Edgar Renteria, Jim Edmonds, and Albert Pujols, all Cardinals, Gary Sheffield for the Braves, Barry Bonds for the Giants, in the American League, Esteban Loaiza was the starting pitcher. There's a name. Jorge Posada, Carlos Delgado for the Blue Jays, Alfonso Soriano for the Yankees, Troy Glaus for the Angels, Alex Rodriguez for the Rangers, Manny Ramirez for the Red Sox, Hideki Matsui for the Yankees, Ichiro Suzuki for the Mariners, and Edgar Martinez for the Mariners. That year's home run derby, Garrett Anderson won. Garrett Anderson, Albert Pujols, Jason Giambi, Jim Edmonds, Gary Sheffield, Carlos Delgado, Richie Sexson, and Brett Boone. I remember that. And I remember that Brett Boone hit zero home runs.
Yep. You know, as we thought he would.
Yes.
So, after the All-Star break, September 14th, the Tigers set a franchise record with their 110th loss. A few days later, they set the AL record with their 118th loss. September 25th, Carlos Delgado hits four homers in a game. Carlos Delgado needs to be in the Hall of Fame.
He is an underrated player.
He is someone who you could argue was a decade player, a time capsule guy. But
I would say decade. I guess decade is a little different than my definition of time capsule.
So he did a lot in that decade.
Yeah, Torrey Hunter is also a decade guy. In his first 13 seasons, he won 9 gold gloves.
Yeah, Carlos Delgado was very close to having 500 home runs.
Yes.
But the last games are played in Philadelphia's Veterans Stadium and San Diego's Qualcomm Stadium. November 28th, so this is after the postseason even, the Red Sox send a handful of pitchers and a minor leaguer to Arizona for Curt Schilling. Curt Schilling would go on to win 2 World Series with the Red Sox. In the postseason, once again returning to the postseason, another 100-plus win season for the Yankees pushed them into first place in the AL East, and another playoff appearance. Their opponents for the divisional series was another returning team, the Central leading 90-win Twins. The Yankees disposed of them, this time in 4 games. The other ALDS game saw the wildcard Red Sox make their first postseason appearance since 1999. They took on the AL West leading 96-win Athletics. It took one game longer than their rivals, the Yankees, but the Red Sox advanced to the ALCS after beating the A's in 5 games. I think that was the first time since 1986 they made it to the ALCS.
Oh, the Red Sox?
Yeah. Yep. In the National League, the Cubs, 88-74, is the worst of any playoff team, but it was enough to help them lead the NL Central. They took on the perennial NL East champs, the 100-win Braves. The Cubs gave the Braves another early exit by beating them in 5 games. The wildcard Marlins made their presence known by sending the 100-win Giants packing early after a 4-game series victory. With the Cubs and the Red Sox on their on the way to their respective league championships, the baseball world started talking the two teams with storied curses potentially facing one another in the World Series.
Red Sox versus Cubs.
Mm-hmm. The ALCS was one for the ages as the longstanding Yankees-Red Sox rivalry only heated up. After an exciting back and forth, including in Game 3, after Pedro Martinez hit Kareem Garcia and Roger Clemens came close to hitting Manny Ramirez, well, Manny reacted like he almost got hit. But both benches emptied.
Yeah.
Yankee bench coach Don Zimmer charged Pedro, who in turn grabbed the old man by his bald head and threw him to the ground. No one was ejected, and the Yankees won.
One of the most indelible images in baseball mm-hmm. history.
Yeah, he charged Pedro.
Yeah.
However, the Red Sox took the next two and forced the game 7. Unfortunately for the Sox, their dreams were dashed when the late-season Yankees acquisition Aaron Boone, so a different Boone, the other Boone brother, hit a walk-off home run to send the Yankees to their 6th World Series in 8 years. The NLCS had its own controversy.
Mm.
The Marlins went down in the series 3-1. Josh Beckett pitched a solid Game 5 to keep the team alive. However, it was in Game 6 where the Billy Goat curse became the curse of the scapegoat. In Game 6 at Wrigley, the Cubs led 3-0 through 7. In the top of the 8th, Marlins shortstop Luis Castillo popped a fly ball down the left field foul line. Cub left fielder Moises Alou ran for the ball as it started veering into the stands, only to have his efforts interrupted by the reaching hands of Steve Bartman.
Dude, the Bartman.
Oh, yeah. Alou reacted in anger, and no fan interference was called. The Marlins proceeded to score 8 runs. Bartman was escorted out, and Cubs fans for years showered the man with verbal abuse and death threats. Later on, Alou admitted he wouldn't have been able to make the catch, and Bartman wasn't the only person reaching for the ball.
Yeah.
The Marlins took Game 6 and then Game 7 after the Cubs blew another lead.
Do you know, I mean, Moises Alou owes Steve Bartman not just a sincere apology, mm-hmm. but some sort of, like, financial
compensation.
The Cubs owe Steve Bartman an apology, mm-hmm. even though it's the managers and the players would accept responsibility, and they're like, we had plenty of opportunities to still win that game, and mm-hmm. we didn't. Yep. It forced a Game 7, and we lost Game 7.
Mm-hmm.
Like, someone owes him an apology.
Yeah.
Like, because that man's life was ruined.
Oh,
he
was
truly a scapegoat in mm-hmm. the truest definition of a scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
No one blamed, I think it was like Alex Gonzalez who fumbled a ground ball at shortstop.
Yeah.
No one blamed all the other players that couldn't get it done. It's Steve Bartman's fault. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And just, I think even after the Cubs won the World Series in 2016,
yeah.
I don't remember if...
Yeah, I don't
like,
remember.
There was... I don't know if fans gave him grace. I don't know.
I don't know.
It's a real shitty situation.
Yeah, of course.
In one of the more unassuming World Series, the Marlins upset the Yankees in 6 games. Josh Beckett took home the World Series MVP.
Yep. Speaking of MVPs, mm-hmm. we're going to usher in the 2003 awards and honors. The National League MVP was Barry Bonds again. American League MVP was Alex Rodriguez. The National League Cy Young Award went to Eric Gagne, who is a closer.
Yeah.
Which is wild
mm-hmm.
that a reliever won the Cy Young Award. But I'm pretty sure Dennis Eckersley won it in like 88. But
he won the MVP in 88.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is great. Yeah. Even more impressive. Mm-hmm. Cy Young for the American League is Roy Halladay. National League Rookie of the Year is Dontrell Willis for the Marlins. American League Rookie of the Year is Angel Baroa for the Royals. National League Manager of the Year is Jack McKeon for the Marlins. And American League Manager of the Year is Tony Pena for the Royals.
Some milestones. Alex Rodriguez became the youngest player to reach 300 career home runs. Sammy Sosa hits his 500th career home run. Rafael Palmeiro hits his 500th career home run. Roger Clemens notches his 300th win and 4,000th strikeout. June 23rd, Barry Bonds steals second base and becomes the first and only player to be in the 500 home runs and 500 steals club.
Man.
Tony La Russa gets his 2,000th win. Some deaths. Actually, June 18th, Larry Doby passed away. Hall of Famer for the Cleveland Indians, who became the first black player to integrate the American League. Yep. Bob Hope, legendary entertainer who was part owner of the Indians in the 50s. Bobby Bonds passed away. Hall of Fame pitcher and Braves great Warren Spahn passed away. And former All-Star Yvonne Calderon passed away.
Yeah. And in 2002, I think Ted Williams passed away as well.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why I didn't put that. That was huge news. Who we said was a notorious asshole. But
still one of, if not the greatest hitter of all time.
Absolutely. It was a science to the man.
Yeah.
Just like it's a science to us to love science, but also to love all of you.
Yes.
So thank you all for listening. Again, this, I know at the top we tried to say 2000 to 2006 we're trying to fit in one episode, but we realized as we were continuing to record,
It's going to take a little bit.
So what we're saying, this is 2000 to 2003, and then the next episode in the next few weeks here will be 2004 to 2006. Mm-hmm. Thank you all for listening, and until the next time,
be good to yourselves, be good to each other, because why would you want to be rude when you could be rad? We'll see you next time.
This concludes our broadcast day.